David Cobb is college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. He is on X at David W. Cobb. He joins three times a week and on this beautiful Friday. David, happy Friday to you, brother.
Happy Friday to you, Gabe. How are you celebrating?
I am going to Italian Fest, old Italian Fest. You've kicked around Italian Fest a few times, I'd imagine.
Yeah, that's a good one. What are you looking forward to? You got a special Italian dish that's your favorite, or are you just like, hey, give me pizza?
Usually I'm hanging out at the bar with the boys. They put out a few pizzas and pastas. I enjoy those in passing.
Yeah, you know, Peroni, that's a well-regarded... Italian beer. Yeah, and then I think martini, that's Italian too, is it not?
I would imagine. Tini. Yeah. I don't know. That strikes me as an Italian word. I don't know, though, for sure. I'm not a big martini guy, though. I'm going to be honest with you, David. I don't know if I've ever really had a legit martini in my life.
Yeah, you don't see a whole lot of offensive linemen going up to the bar and saying, hey, let me have a martini.
I feel like if I went up to the bar and asked for like an Appletini or a martini, they'd give me a really weird look.
Yeah, don't do that. I think.
But I'll say this: I'm not a drink shamer, so I don't want someone to do. If I had the craving for a martini, I don't need drink shamers. Drink shamers are the worst.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm glad you're repping the those of us who like a little pink in our drink.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I want to talk about the NBA Finals off the top here. What we have set: the Mavs versus the Celtics. What are your first thoughts on that? I certainly lean Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, a part of me would love to see the Celtics get it done. Looking for a Memphis connection there. How about a shout out to Xavier Tillman?
Yep.
Right, former Grizzly. So I love to see when the former Grizzlies go on and do good things, especially when they were more than just like a ship passing through in the night. Like if Bruno Caboclo won a NBA title, I don't know that I'd get real fired up about that. You know.
Right.
But Xavier Tillman 1-1, I think he did his time here to where I could be happy for him in that respect. But I think it's a great matchup. There's a sicko part of me though that would have loved to have seen Indiana and Minnesota in the NBA Finals, just to kind of
sicko. I will say you're a sicko for that.
Yeah, the ratings would have been bad, and the basketball might not have been quite as compelling, or really anywhere close to as compelling. But I mean, I don't hate those sort of small market matchups as much as other people seem to. Ultimately, I will enjoy watching this finals, though. It feels like the right time for the Mavericks to take this step. And then, of course, the Celtics have been knocking on the door for quite a while. Feels like Jason Tatum versus Luka Doncic could be a sort of all-time legendary NBA finals, because those are two of the preeminent superstars in our game right now. When you get Giannis, you know, not being quite at his peak anymore, and LeBron getting older, and the Splash Bros phasing out, and all those Clippers guys are all hurt and old now. So, you know, to me, it feels like two of the new faces of the NBA squaring off in the NBA Finals, which should make for a pretty good series.
Yeah, and Luka and Kyrie, they were so damn ridiculous last night. I don't know if you got to watch a game. 72 combined points. That was crazy. That was absolutely nuts. But I will say, as you know, being here in Memphis, I think a lot of Grizzlies fans are happy to see the Timberwolves knocked out. Makes you feel a little bit better about yourself.
Yeah, well, and the other element too, Kyrie versus Boston. Like that's pretty cool. His old team. There will be some. I mean, I suppose the hostilities there have kind of died down. I guess I need to ask our old buddy Kari Thompson if that's truly the case. He's up there covering Boston and going to be covering the NBA Finals now, which is really cool for the former Commercial Appeal Preps writer to have that opportunity and whatnot. But you see the Timberwolves knockout. They just weren't quite ready yet. I mean, Anthony Edwards is so young, and he's going to get there. I mean, just like Luka Doncic had to take his lumps, and just like Jason Tatum took some playoff L's, it's not shocking to see a guy as young as Anthony Edwards kind of struggle a little bit. And I think there might have – I don't know that he was 100% healthy either, like during that entire series. And it's the playoffs, and I get it. There's going to be wear and tear. But to me, it felt like he struggled a little bit down the stretch in that series after what started out as like a really competitive back and forth between those two teams.
Yep. Now, on CBS Sports, you have your post-withdrawal deadline mock draft, NBA mock draft. Gotta love it. You have Alex Saar going number one of the Hawks, Zachary Risacher number two. I think those are sort of one and two in whatever order based on a lot of the mock drafts I look at. Stephon Castle number three. But you have Dalton Knecht at five, which I think ESPN had going to the Grizzlies at number nine. But you have, which I think would be if the Grizzlies pick in at number nine, which is still yet to be seen, you have Reed Sheppard at nine. That would be a very, very good pickup, and I think they could move off of Luke Kennard in that particular situation. But what do you, I mean, obviously you have him listed at number nine. Do you think there's a chance that he actually falls that far down?
I think there's a chance because he's an undersized guard who isn't particularly explosive. I mean, I know he measured fairly well in the vertical leap, but if you go and look at it at the times that he ran at the combine, it just sort of verifies that, like, he's not that explosive sort of athlete. And so you're banking on a guy whose game is predicated on intangibles and IQ translating to the highest level of the game. Maybe there could be some concern come draft night for some, you know, from some teams over that, and I think that might be justified. And in this scenario where the Grizzlies end up with Reed Sheppard at nine, it would be a good pick, but I don't know that it's the ideal situation for the Grizzlies. I mapped this thing out without any one particular team's interest above the others, so I wasn't doing this with a Grizzlies tent, right, if you will. And so, you know, I think the Grizzlies might prefer a guy with a little bit more seasoning, a little bit more age, than having to go the one-and-done route and plugging a 19-year-old into a win-now situation in Memphis. And so, honestly, you mentioned the ESPN mock that has Dalton Knecht at nine. I would view that as a more favorable situation for the Grizzlies because, I mean, I think Dalton Knecht can come into the NBA tomorrow and get you some buckets and play 20-plus minutes a game for you and hit some threes. And I'm not saying Reed Sheppard definitely can't do that, but you're talking about 19 years old versus 23, and we saw what Dalton Knecht did against the highest level of competition last year. If I'm a Grizzlies fan, if I put my Grizzlies cap back on for a second, I would prefer Knecht over Sheppard at number nine. I'm not convinced that Dalton Knecht's going to be there at nine.
But there's also a report out from Jonathan Givony that Portland, Chicago, and then the Grizzlies might look to move up to draft Donovan Klingon. What would be, I mean, I think like six, I guess, to the Hornets would be open to go trade up. You have them. You have Donovan Klingon at number six to the Hornets. Or I guess you could trade up to number three because the Rockets pick is up for grabs. But I think, you know, as far as Donovan Klingon goes as a prospect, it's kind of interesting how he's viewed. Like, some people will view him as, you know, high floor, not as high ceiling guy. But some people view him as high floor and high ceiling because of the ability he may have to shoot. Where do you stand on that, on sort of his upside and what he could possibly be in the NBA?
I mean, yeah, I think Donovan Klingon would be a pretty good pickup for the Grizzlies, you know. So another situation here where, you know, there were three guys that I would love for the Grizzlies that I actually had mocked as being selected before number nine, and it's Knecht, it's Klingon, and then I also think Devin Carter out of Providence would fit nicely with the Grizzlies. A very multi-dimensional veteran player from the college ranks.
Son of an assistant.
Yeah, a lot of scouts have fallen in love with him. He would be somebody to look at too. But yeah, I think Klingon would translate, and I think he fits with the Grizzlies' needs. I mean, of course, like the NBA, you can go out and get a big out of free agency or trade for one or whatever. And you know, I was listening to G&J today since it was Mark's last show, and you know, shout out to Mark. And
shout out.
I think Connor mentioned Clint Capella or you know, as maybe like a free agency ad or something, right? You know, and so there's going to be other options out there if they don't end up with a big in this draft, but Donovan Klingon would be a good one. He could come in and kind of free Jaren up to stay at the four, and then you got one of the best shot blockers in college basketball over the last 10 years, out there protecting the rim for you. And so, yeah, I mean, Donovan Klingon can dunk for you. I don't know that I really see him taking a lot of NBA distance threes early in his career. Right. So he's one of those guys you have to be a little patient with offensively. But defensively, you know, he's somebody who can make an impact for you pretty early.
Now, let me ask you this. Is it impossible to put together a full first-round mock for this NBA draft with the talent pool being seemingly down? It's tough. There's a lot of fluctuation with every single prospect.
it is tough. And then you got a handful, as you do every year, but this year in particular, a lot of international flavor, a decent amount of G League Ignite flavor. Yep. And for me, I watch the college guys night in, night out. I know their games. I get a sense for how they would fit in the league. But when it comes down to figuring out where to put the international guys and the G League Ignite guys and the overtime elite guys, there's not really any of them at the top of this draft. It's tough because you got to get down like the YouTube rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And then you got to have the real GM page pulled up, which like takes away all your internet bandwidth. And so, the research that goes into these, it's fairly exhaustive because, you know, it's not just these college players that you know, somebody like me knows well. It's a lot of the international players that we're seeing, you know, projected in the lottery range too. And then you got to have a keen eye to kind of contrast that and those international stats and tape with guys that you've seen playing college.
And then, of course, three of your top four picks in your mock drafters are international guys, Zachary Risacher, Alex Saar, and then Nikola Topic at four to the Spurs. So you had to get down that YouTube rabbit hole, completely understand. Now, I want to transition a little college football. Talk with David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X. Not much from SEC spring meetings, right? Like, there's just really not. I mean, usually it's a lot more lively. I guess Lane Kiffin's always lively, but not a whole lot being announced or thrown out there by anybody at SEC spring meetings.
Yeah, I mean, I think even the football coaches were bored to tears by all the settlement talk. I mean, they're coming out of spring practice. They're trying to finalize their rosters. They're looking ahead to preseason practice, and here they are getting briefed by associate league commissioners and probably some lawyers about the Title IX implications of a lawsuit. So, yeah, I don't even think the football coaches were probably paying too close of attention at those spring meetings this year. But, I mean, on the grand scheme of things, it's more consequential discussion than really what's been had, you know, typically at those things. But, yeah, it's all still the boring, you know, your gut eyes glaze over sort of stuff that doesn't really impact the on-the-field product so much. You know, there weren't a whole lot of rules changes or like transfer controversies. Man, I remember in the past, one of the hot topics was the intra-league transfers. And, you know, if you left an SEC school and went to another, would you be eligible immediately? And that was always a hot topic. But, you know, nothing really along those lines this year.
Yeah, but I will say at Big 12 spring meetings, I did get a kick out of the remaining stance, the stance that has remained over the past few years from Brett Yormark. He said that, "I've said from day one we're open for business." I guess you could say that we're open for business more than ever. I'm going to try to break this down a little bit later, but I want to ask you, who's he talking to? Like, what is he referring to when he says they're open for business, potential realignment, potential expansion?
Yeah, I mean, when I hear Brett Yormark say he's open for business, I mean, I think of a lot of things. I mean, this is a guy who's trying to take college basketball to Mexico.
Right.
This is a guy who's renting billboard space in Times Square for a college conference, which is, you know, he's kind of all over the place, and that's his background in entertainment and marketing and stuff. So when I hear him say that, I, you know, my mind goes a lot of different directions. And I mean, there's been this sort of rumor underneath the surface that Utah, right, might be looking to go to the ACC and might not want to stick in the Big 12. And so, you know, maybe there's something going on under the surface there. But open for business in terms of expansion, that's a little surprising for me. But, you know, you've always sort of had this idea that Yormark was interested in cementing the Big 12's place as the country's top college basketball conference. And so I wonder if there's not an angle there that he's working with Gonzaga and with some of these Big East schools. You know, they're kind of fed up with you know, the situation they're in with that settlement, the house settlement, and how they're going to be on the hook for so much, even though they don't play football. You know, is Brett Yormark working a basketball angle there and trying to speak to the Big East and to Gonzaga and some of these other basketball first type of schools?
One thing I was thinking about, if he wants to sort of strengthen football even further and maybe expand to 20, because maybe we're headed that direction, I think the other angle that I sort of approached is ACC. We know that Florida State, Clemson want to get out of there at some point, and there's been pending litigation there. If they were to leave, North Carolina leaves, that type of thing, which I don't know what's going to happen because 2036 is when their grant of rights runs out, and they say it's ironclad, but we'll see how ironclad it is. Could he be talking to ACC schools? Like some of those, like if that conference becomes destabilized, would he ultimately reach out and potentially bring those guys in? I know it's so hard to predict, and I'm out of the business of trying to predict realignment and what he could potentially add to his conference, but that's another angle I thought about.
Yeah, I'll play along there a little bit and say, yeah, you know, what if North Carolina and Florida State and Clemson get out and they end up in the SEC or the Big Ten or something, and then the second-tier ACC schools, they're fed up and they're looking to get out too. Could we see the consolidation to three power conferences where the Big 12 has 20 and they pick up Virginia Tech and Syracuse and, you know, a whole bunch of other schools that make no geographical sense whatsoever? I mean, I mean, look, the ACC now has Cal and Stanford. So,
Who cares about geography anymore? We don't
care. Like, so who says the Big 12 can't have Syracuse and Virginia Tech? And so, you know, how that pertains to Memphis, I don't know. I mean, like, I think if you're Memphis and you had your pick of the Big 12 or the ACC, I kind of think you might rather go to the Big 12. It seems to me like 100%. They're the more forward-thinking league. They've got the more nimble-footed commissioner. I mean, we kind of make fun or roll our eyes a little bit at some of the things that Brett Yormark says, but, man, he seems to be way more innovative and on top of it than Jim Phillips does. So, you know, I think I'd rather go to the conference that has that guy as their leader. So, I mean, we'll see how it shakes out, but I mean, it's never a bad thing for Memphis when you hear of the Big 12 commissioner talking about being open for business at the same time when the ACC is kind of struggling to hold their ship together. So, you know, to me, that just kind of illustrates what we've known all along, which is that this thing isn't completely done yet. There are still evolutions to come, and we're not going to have to wait a decade for that next wave of realignment.
And I completely, like, you know, I think there's a overarching, like, problem, like it's a symptom of the issue, the way that Brett Yormark operates with where we're headed, you know, like the geographical line's completely gone. But he has done what the rest of college athletics has done. It's business over tradition, right? And I think that he's latched onto that, and he's way better for it. And then you look at the Pac-12 and the way that whole thing unfolded. George Kliavkoff and a lot of the chancellors and presidents, they wanted tradition over business. And that's why they ceased to exist.
And the Big 12 is also the least stuffy about academic alignment. And they don't care if you're a member of the AAU accreditation, you know, fraternity or whatever. But, you know, certainly the ACC and the Big Ten, they seem to really care about your academic research credentials and, you know, all these things. But with the way the Big 12 has expanded and their current membership, I mean, that's not the focus. And it shouldn't be. It's a sports conference. Like, any university can collaborate with any other university in the country on biomedical research or curing cancer. That those partnerships can exist independent of sports. And so it feels to me like Brett Yormark understands that this is a sports conference and an entertainment product. And yes, these are academic institutions, but their athletic departments essentially function as independent entities. And so you don't have to play that game because, as you mentioned, it really got the Pac-12 nowhere.
Yep. Now, last thing for David Cobb at David W. Cobb, college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. Tiger basketball lost David Jones, but it looks like they're hitting the ground running, right? There's a couple reports out there. They've reached out to Arthur Kaluma from Kansas State and Trayvon Brazil from Arkansas, and he was previously at Mizzou, but the ACL injury. But these are two guys that got out of the NBA draft or in the transfer portal. It looks like Penny's going to hit the ground running and try to get a replacement as fast as possible.
Yeah, you know, we talked about it. David Jones leaving, it's not ideal, but it does free up a little bit of salary that you had set aside for you know, him coming back. And now there's a role to pitch as well. I've got a big update coming to my transfer rankings, and Arthur Kaluma will be in them in the middle there at number 40. He's been a really high-quality college basketball player for quite a while. He played his first two seasons at Creighton and then was at Kansas State this past year. I mean, this is a guy that started somewhere around 100 games in power conferences before. And so, yeah, he's not exactly a David Jones replica. He's not nearly the three-point shooter that David Jones is, but he's a big wing, and he would be a good get. Trayvon Brazil, to me, has always been more tools and more potential than actual substance.
Right.
So if I had to pick between the two, I'd go for Arthur Kaluma just based on those grounds. And I think he's a little bit more versatile, a little bit more athletic than Brazil, who's, you know, 6'11 and athletic for his size. But, yeah, Kaluma would be a good get. I don't know that he's got the reputation as being like an A-plus locker room guy.
Okay.
But he has made an impact for good college basketball teams over his career.
Trayvon Brazil, though, it felt like 2 years ago before the ACL injury, he was really sort of coming into his own with Arkansas, right? Because it looked like he had sort of turned a corner.
It did. And he was a guy who generated quite a bit of NBA draft buzz because, again, he's got all the tools. You know, 6'9", 6'10".
Decent shot.
You know, yeah. He's got the NBA prototypical skill set, like a lot of things that a scout would watch him in a workout or in a two-on-two setting and say, okay, I could see that guy in the league. I've just never really seen him put it all together for any consistent length of time on the floor. And so, you know, he would be somebody you could go out and get, but, you know, I don't know. I'd have limited expectations for his actual productivity, just because of the track record there isn't great. But he's got a lot of tools. He can play a role for you. And if you end up going that direction at this stage in the portal, that's still a pretty good add.
Yes, sir. I hear you. Well, have a good weekend, David. We'll talk on Monday.
All right, Gabe. Have a good one.
Yes, sir. That's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X from CBS Sports, covering college football and college basketball. Joins every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And he is brought to you by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store. It's been making waves in Memphis for over a decade. Get over to 964 June Road, off Poplar, on June Road, behind the Amoco Station. You can find, the gift ideas, the gift-giving ideas there are absolutely unbelievable. It's a two-story storefront, by the way. It's massive, and they have a selection of anything your heart desires. On the bottom floor, you're going to have the clothes and all the knickknacks. On the top floor, you get the hunting and outdoor essentials. But make sure you go pet Earl the dog while you're in there. He's an A-list celebrity here in Memphis. And tell him that Gabe sent you. But that clothing is what I want to focus on here. They obviously have vintage tees, but they have some good brands for polos and button-downs and everything else. They have Genteel, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzet, and Maine. They have your favorite teams in there. So if you want Grizzlies, Tigers, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, you name it, they have it. And if you want to, if you're a guy that gets out or a gal that gets out to, you know, go tailgate on the Grove or at Tiger Lane, they have your tailgating game day essentials, cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers. Everything is conveniently located in that spot at 964 June Road, off Poplar, on June Road, behind the Amoco Station. But I haven't even told you, sports memorabilia, vintage vinyl as well. They have everything there at Oxbow, one-stop shop for everything you possibly could want or need. And then you can go online as well, shopoxbow.com. I tell you all the time, shopoxbow.com is our online store. Everything's conveniently placed there, easy to navigate site. But when you go to fill up that shopping cart and you get it full, you have that price at the bottom, you can knock 20% off that price. And I'll tell you how. I have a promo code that you can use. The Gabe Show, all caps, no spaces, The Gabe Show. And you'll get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com. Whether you're going online or in store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now, I know we just ended the discussion talking with David Cobb about the couple of recruits that have been reached out to by Penny Hardaway, Rick Stansberry, and the staff, and David Jones' departure. So we'll talk about those guys next. Who do I want to see make it to campus? I'll answer that right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Back in on the Gabe Kruger Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. We're 2 days removed from David Jones staying in the NBA draft, and it definitely leaves a void behind for this Tigers team going into next year. Now, I will say this, when you just look around the country and you look at some of these people in college basketball media, they're still thought of highly. I still think this is a complete team. It just definitely limits their ceiling and limits their offensive ability and production, not having David Jones. P.J. Haggerty can still give you 20 points per game, potentially. I think that Colby Rogers will be very good from the three-point line. He's been a 40% shooter just about his entire career. Barack Okogie is a backup. A point guard should be nice. Tyrese Hunter's been good everywhere he's been, and he's another guy who can handle the ball. And then you have Nick Jourdain left. You still have a team that you can run out there and feel comfortable about, but I still think you need to find a way to at least replicate half, if not three-quarters of the production of David Jones, because you're not going to replicate all 22 points of David Jones. That is just not going to happen. Now, there's a couple of guys that the Tigers, Penny Hardaway, Rick Stansberry, that staff, they've reached out to. I'm going to start with the one that I'm not as high on first and then get to the one that I'm higher on. Trayvon Brazil from Arkansas started his career at Mizzou. Last year, averaged 8.6 points per game, 6 rebounds per game in about 25 minutes, but he was coming off an ACL injury, and he never really could get himself going. I thought in 22-23, he had 11 points per game, around 6 rebounds per game, and he shot really well from the three-point line, about 38%. I thought that was the year he was going to take advantage of, you know, really getting himself over the hump. I talked to David Cobb about it. But that ACL injury definitely...
It looks like a red flag.
I don't know if they necessarily have a full-on need for a guy like Trayvon Brazil at this particular moment. I guess you could get as many bigs as possible, but I think that this is a guy who's going to want to be on the floor. You don't want to create any issues with that. But he is 6'10", 220. He has a three-point ball. He's super athletic, hyper-athletic, can get off the bounce with it. So I like his skill set. I just don't know if it's a perfect fit for what Penny Hardaway wants to do at this particular moment. I think you need to find more of a wing player,
yeah.
And I don't think Trayvon Brazil fits
that. Jason and I talked about him earlier. First of all, I hated Arkansas's team last year, so nothing against Trayvon Brazil, but like, don't you sort of have this player on the roster already? I mean, you've got a shot blocker, you've got a big in Dane Danger. This guy isn't an elite scorer. It doesn't feel
he
like
he has that's the thing. He has the upside to be an elite scorer, but he never.
But he's coming
really
off an ACL
that.
Too, so it's like, you know. I know he's 6'10". There's just other players, and I'm looking at 2'4". Here's what 247 said. They said he spent two seasons at Arkansas, 6'10", 220, 8.6, 5.9 rebounds. He did miss most of February with knee soreness. He played 9 games during his sophomore season. Then he had suffered the ACL with the right knee. He's got 1 year of the other thing is he only got 1 year of eligibility. Yeah, nice to get a multi-year guy too, wouldn't it?
I guess, but at the same time, you're late in the portal.
No, I know
you're
not
necessarily.
Get,
there's not a lot.
You're
of,
probably only going to get a 1 year
because
guy.
These are NBA draft
right.
guys
no,
anyway.
Right.
So even if they that's have a couple of years left, they're still going to try to get to the NBA draft.
And they're going to get paid a premium by the way too.
Yeah, that's the thing, and I'll get to that in a second. But like Trayvon Brazil, if they added him, okay. But I just don't necessarily think. I think Nick Jourdain is probably the more well-rounded. Team first version of Trayvon Brazil. Now, I think Trayvon Brazil is a more talented player, probably a better player on the offensive end, but Nick Jourdain, I think, can sort of, you have that right now, and it's a holdover from last year, and he understands what Penny expects of him. Now, the other guy that I'm actually a little higher on, Arthur Kaluma from Kansas State, 14 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 2 assists per game, about 35% from 3, and he is truly a three-level scorer. He can do it from the wing. He was at Creighton. He's been at Kansas State. He's been at winning programs. He's played in a tournament. Like, Arthur Kaluma is definitely a guy that I would like to see on campus. Now, how much you're going to have to pay for the guy? And then also, David Cobb brought it up, and this is something I have heard, you know, whispers, murmurs of. He's maybe not the best locker room guy, and you do not want bad locker room guys. We have seen several times in the past that when Penny and this team have a lot of drama and internal strife, the season doesn't end how it's supposed to end. When they don't, 2 years ago, with Kendrick Davis and DeAndre Williams, certified, understood pecking order, no drama at all. What do? They accomplish what they're supposed to accomplish, and they have one of the best seasons under Penny Hardaway's tenure. So I just think, like, that's the only drawback or potential drawback, but that could be a lot of smoke and not a lot of fire.
Kaluma looks great, though.
Like, yes.
He actually, if he's a mess, it's no good. But, like, that's going to be the hardest thing for Penny. But this Kaluma kid, like, 14-7, 42%, like, he looks great.
Yeah, and
athletic,
he can get off the bounce, get teammates involved a little bit.
He looks
too.
Good.
He rebounds at a really high level.
He's improved every year too. He hasn't had any regression.
From
like every year, he's
player to player, player to player. Yeah. I think him and David Jones, like that would be a good.
Yeah,
that would be a
comp.
Great replacement.
Yeah.
Great replacement. Now. With all these conversations,
he's also 6'7" and not 6'3". Then we're acting like
well,
he's
we'll
7 feet
we'll
tall.
We'll see what he is. If
yeah,
he...
maybe we should measure him at Memphis. Memphis has a measurement issue.
He was at the NBA. He was at the NBA combine.
Put your shoes
right?
on, kid. See. Thanks.
But with all these things, with where we're operating in the calendar, with the types of guys that you're going to go after, these aren't going to be small fish anymore. Like, you need to go find a guy to replace the offensive production some way, somehow, of David Jones, or at least part of it. You're going to be paying a premium. And Penny talked about this, I believe, on the podcast with Evan Turner and with Andre Iguodala. The later you get in the calendar, the more these guys start asking for, and he said these guys make more than my assistant coaches, and I think that's what he fell into last year. But it's better than, you know, he signed how many guys late in the portal? I mean, like 3-4 guys, all talented, all with, you know, a bunch of years of experience, probably had them on big NIL deals. Now you're just talking about one guy that you're having to do that with, which I think is a whole lot better than the way he built the roster last year and the timing that it all came together.
It may not be $2 million, but let's say you had $1 million and he'd go for it. Would you get a kid like Coleman Hawkins and overpay for him?
I don't know. I mean, Coleman Hawkins is a great player. It does sound like he is really – he's bag chasing. I don't know if Penny Hardaway in this – after last year, I don't think you need to get into the business of anybody who's bag chasing.
I think that's fair. That's a decent answer.
And Coleman Hawkins, too, like, yeah, you – starting type big, stretch the floor. I don't know if his fit's perfect for rim running, though. Like, he's not a rim running big by any stretch of the imagination for Penny, and that's what Penny
can.
Needs.
He is a freak, dude. I mean, did you see those tournament games?
Yeah,
like, he's freaky.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I would term him that. I don't think he's like
6'10".
He's not a plus athlete, though. He's a middling athlete.
I think he's a plus basketball athlete.
Yes, and like he can shoot the three.
Looks like a gazelle.
He's decent on the defensive side.
I mean, he's long,
but it looks like he's really wanting to go get some money. And yeah. Also, he said that he wants to go to a place where he can watch a fun football game in a full stadium. So that's interesting.
Well, we're working on our damn stadium, Coleman. Calm down.
Yeah, he's aiming pretty high, yeah. I guess, into the Power Four.
Well, hey, my point to Jason was, I mean, Washington is paying a $2 million player this year.
Yes, great Osabor.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot. And a lot of these guys right now are going to be asking for $2 million because they're coming out of the NBA draft. They feel like they're...
Honestly,
dang.
It's a
like,
great
I'm going to be one of the
position.
Best players in college
if
basketball.
You're one of the... You know you're probably one of the top 10 players in America that's coming back.
If
you're not already in a roster and
you
you're
transferring. You think that about yourself, yes.
Right.
The top 25, top 30 was more realistic.
I'm trying to be your representation here so I can get a cut.
Yes. Now... One thing I brought up yesterday, Brad, and I'm going to run this by everyone yet again. Just because a guy is committed and or signed does not mean that Memphis is out of the fight. I'm going to put it that way.
Well,
I'm going to put it out.
Please do.
Emmanuel Acott, if you'll remember, and I talked to Jason Munns about this yesterday. Emmanuel Acott was not just committed. He signed to the University of Memphis. Got on. Boots on the ground, 2 days into the whole thing. I think he participated at like a workout. 2 days into the thing, he got let go of his letter of intent, went to Western Kentucky.
Right. It's free
agent. So don't think that, you know, remember we talked about Aaron Scott. We talked from North Texas who went to St. John's. Talked about TJ Bamba, who's from Villanova, who ultimately went to Oregon, who was really, I think that honestly the reason he committed to Oregon and not Memphis is he was protecting himself in case David Jones came back, because then the money wouldn't be as high and the opportunity wouldn't be as high. I'm just saying, as much as we're going to talk about these guys that are theoretically available on the transfer portal, don't ever count anybody out from hopping away from the situation they just committed and signed to and ending up at the University of Memphis.
Well, what was the rule yesterday on the extra year of eligibility that was popping around Twitter last night? Let me go look.
Yeah, I need you to...
John Martin was tweeting about this last night, so let me pull up John's account.
And here's the truth
of it. I'm not sorry to riff during the show.
Oh, no, riff. Riff away. I'll say this, though. I'm done with... trying to keep up with eligibility.
Oh, like the going back for the waiver stuff?
Oh, it's so frustrating.
Okay, here it is. This is from at TP4PT, which is Transfer Portal for Playing Time.
Okay.
I've never heard of this account until last night.
TP4PT.
Yeah, follow it. Yeah, there's 25,000 followers. It's on John Martin's timeline. Here it is. And I don't think this is BS. Breaking news. The NCAA will grant an additional year of eligibility to any D1 student-athlete who was ruled ineligible to compete for any part of a season during or since the 2019-20 academic year.
So you're saying there's names that we don't think are available?
Here are two names that John Martin goes, run it back with Quinterly and Jordan Brown.
That's disgusting. That is nasty work.
Have a little fun there, man.
That's nasty.
Have a little
work.
Fun.
John, that is disgusting.
John's been gone too long on paternity leave.
I swear, man.
22 hours ago. He's tweeting this from his hotel room in Chicago.
He's just trying to have fun with that one. That's all that is.
I don't know what's up with this account or what the rule is. It's probably a joke. But every time you think that Penny, to your point about even if somebody's rostered in another place, and who is it that had the quote? It might have been Munns. It's never over with Penny.
It's not.
If you think it's done, it's not.
Because there is that possibility out there, and I don't know TJ Bamba personally, but he was really thinking about coming to Memphis. Now he sees David Jones off to the NBA, and he says, oh my gosh, there's probably $1 million worth of NIL money, and damn, I could be the starting three. And I'd get a lot of opportunity.
How crazy is that?
I mean, like, I'm just saying. Like,
and then
on the
you
back
just
end.
Figure out how to figure this out. Like, hey,
I
coach.
Mean, hell, we had a guy that in college football, we had a guy transfer to Iowa, not even play a practice, transfer back to Alabama. Like, Caden Proctor.
That was crazy. That was nuts.
And then when it comes to eligibility, Brad, I know it's complete riffing sidebar.
I'm enjoying this.
Did you see some of the names that got out of the NBA draft to come back to college?
I did.
Caleb Love.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, I guess this is our last year of COVID
yes.
years. I saw Matthew Morrell.
Morrell was a big name. Mark Sears is coming back to Alabama.
I mean, it's like, how long do you get to play in college basketball these days, man?
Well, the extra eligibility is what's weird about it. Because think about it, the years after you got out of college, you get a COVID year. You get an extra year of eligibility and a one-time transfer. You get your 4 years of eligibility. Like, you get, who is our, the Williams years at Memphis? It's yeah. Like, you got 28-year-olds. And, like, this is legitimate eligibility without a waiver.
I mean, we had Seth Towns playing for Howard last year in the NCAA tournament on his eighth year of eligibility.
What were all of the discrepancies to allow that to happen? One's COVID.
A red shirt, medical waiver, and then a medical red shirt.
So okay. Yeah, well, a hardship probably in there
and
someplace.
And then the COVID year. The COVID year. So that makes up the other four.
Everybody,
years.
You know what they should do, Stu? Okay, you get a COVID year, you get a hardship year, just for fun. we'll give you an extra year. You know how the NCAA is going to make extra money when they're out of business? They're just going to sell eligibility years.
Well, but if they're out of business, can they actually sell eligibility?
I don't know. Once they go to chapter 11, that's what they're going to do. How are we going to keep afloat, boss? I don't know. Sell eligibility years to guys like Coleman Hawkins because you can come back and make another $2 million.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. But it's out of control. It's absolutely out of control.
I think you might have a year somewhere in the bag, bro.
No, I don't. I don't.
Come on.
We've checked.
Yeah, that's right. You already had that camp visit with the XFL. I forgot about that.
This has been
that arena league year.
No more eligibility.
You're already a pro.
And honestly, if I hit a football field, I can give you 5 good plays. After that, I'm cooked. Put me in the locker room. I'm sitting down. I need some AC.
Time for some gas.
Give me some water, some Powerade, some Gatorade. Give me electrolytes, whatever, Pedialyte, whatever you got after those 5 plays. Let's go ahead and grab a break, though, on that note, and we'll come back with small talk.
They've hit upon this Fade Brad thing, and how are we ever going to match that, right?
I don't know.
Well, so I've hit upon the new one. Ready?
All right.
It's going to be called Fade Penny Hardaway.
Mm.
What do you think? What do you think? I mean, because, like, the most recent one was 70-30 that David Jones would be coming back. Right?
Stop disrespecting me, bro.
92.9 FM, ESPN, the only place in Memphis for the Jeff Calkins Show. Weekdays from 9 a.m. till 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM, ESPN, Memphis's sports station. Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now we go out to the RBC Canadian Open and Rory McIlroy for our Small Talk today as he started his tournament yesterday, 4 under with a 66. Now, he has since gone 2 over today, and he's 8 shots back of the lead. But what makes this interesting is it feels like Rory's gone on a bender of sorts since the divorce papers have been handed out to Erica Stoll, his divorced wife at this point. This has been very interesting. But he did say after the round yesterday, he got tanked up the night before the Thursday of the RBC Canadian Open, and drank a bunch of wine because it was his caddy's birthday, and still came out and shot that 66 yesterday.
These golfers are amazing. They can get arrested. They can go on benders. Think about Tiger Woods. He's driving off a cliff and knocking out these girls and trying to do side hustles.
Hungover golf? It doesn't sound fun.
Oh, you've done
walking,
it.
Walking 18? Walking 18 hungover?
It's
come on now.
I have done radio shows, not in this market.
I've taken golf trips. I've done the hungover
round.
I get it.
Have you done radio?
No.
That's tough. Trying to host a radio show, a little hung.
With a headache right there in the front.
And then you got the trash can next to you. I've done that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. When I was young. Well, 30 years ago, when I was starting radio, I used to be the board op for the University of Illinois Fighting Illini games. Southern Illinois, so you're running the board.
Oh, the board ops.
Right? No, but I had to talk a little bit. I'd do the little updates in the middle. Take a little break there and then do the report.
Did you make sure to like time it up where you threw
up? Yeah, you got to synchronize your vomit sessions while you're recovering and you're doing the board op thing.
It didn't look like Rory was in the puke stage, though.
Well, see, he controls it. That's not really a bender, then, if you're not vomiting. I mean, that's light work.
But he's been making some trips and enjoying himself ever since the divorce.
Do you think it's him and this Amanda Balonis girl or whatever, the CBS?
I don't want to speculate.
You're speculating?
I don't want to speculate.
That is out there on Yahoo and various publications. Let them do their thing is what you're telling me?
All right. TMZ can TMZ.
Okay.
I'm going to do me.
I don't want to speculate on the Gabe Kuhn show.
I'm going to do me. But right. I will tell you what. We will probably not do a whole bunch of speculation, but we will give you our opinions for that final hour of the show. And we're going to start it with the opinions of Derek Murray on the NBA draft, formerly of Basketball News, Babcock Hoops. So he's next.